Perfect. Okay, okay. So good afternoon. As all of you know, the Ministers of Energy and Resources and Conservation have just released the discussion paper on the stocktake of Schedule 4 land. Summarised briefly, the government proposes to take 7,058 hectares out of Schedule 4, or just 0.2% of all Schedule 4 land. In addition, we are proposing to add 12,400 hectares to Schedule 4 for a net gain of Schedule 4 land of 5,400 hectares. The Schedule 4 land is in the Coromandel Peninsula, Great Barrier Island and the Paparoa National Park. New Zealand is a minerally rich country and the mineral sector has an important role to play in helping increase the country's economic performance. The government is committed to lifting our economic success because that will deliver greater prosperity, security and opportunities for all New Zealanders. What is being proposed today is a pinpoint of some highly valuable discrete mining activity that we believe will balance our economic objectives with our environmental responsibilities. It should be noted that removing an area from Schedule 4 does not mean it will automatically be mined. There is a consenting process to go through. While what is proposed is very modest, our advice is that the returns from even a small increase in mining activity are very large. The sector return is on average $360,000 of GDP per worker, nearly six times the national average. New Zealand currently earns approximately $2 billion a year from mining and resource activity, and while it's too early to know what the possibilities are of opening more land up, the economic impacts over a lifetime could be in the billions. Any mining on conservation land will be subject to strict environmental tests. Environmental management is an integral part of mining operations, and all mining operations must comply with the Resource Management Act and with stringent limits on water discharge quality and quantity. The final point to note is that this is a discussion document containing a set of proposals. No decisions have been made yet. Submissions on the document close on the 4th of May. And at that point, I thought we might take any questions with the, myself or the two ministers, and then at that point, we'll go on to the rest of the activity. Think you covered that off, didn't
you? The numbers are from various analysts who've had a look at the in-situ value of known mineral deposits in New Zealand. And I've stressed all the way through that they are of interest and encouragement, but they shouldn't be taken as being specific. It could be that the value, when that resource is covered, is significantly greater than that. But it is certainly an indication of the extent of the mineralisation inside New Zealand. But we can get you that report from Richard Baker, peer-reviewed by GNS.
Is that what the country would actually be?
No, it's the... If you look at it... you remember that what we're talking about today is an area the size of a postcard sitting on Eden Park. That's the comparative area against New Zealand's landmass. What we're saying is that inside that, there is... the stuff we're talking about today around potentially about a $60 billion in-situ value, estimated. So until someone actually does some further exploration and then a mining activity takes place, you don't know. All it is an estimate of what the geology that's there would tell you might be there in a dollar sense.
So the commission that the New Zealand government would keep, for example, would be considerably less than
what it's currently. Ah, yes, the New Zealand... The royalty that we take on that is considerably less, but as the owner of the land, the royalty is 100% in our favour. But it's the value of the activity and it's the economic effect of the export that comes from that is of real value to the economy as well.
But potentially billions of that could be going offshore if overseas companies come into mine?
Well, people always raise the issue of that repatriation, but it's huge expenditure here. And remember that a lot of mining companies are New Zealand owned and they have equal opportunity to come in and look at that. The biggest mining company in New Zealand, of course, is Solid Energy, state owned.
What's the normal sort of percentage figure for government royalties on mining?
They range depending on the type of product that you're getting, that is being extracted, and on the ownership of the land. So we can provide you with those figures It'd be probably quite a long document to show exactly what we get out of those things.
Thomas, what sort of arguments in the public submissions would convince you to not proceed with these proposals?
Obviously, if we didn't believe we could undertake the activity on an environmentally sustainable basis, so that environmental test is important, and obviously that's subject to RMA approval. Secondly, if we didn't believe that the mineral wealth was actually there, and therefore it wasn't worth undertaking this effort. Thirdly, we'll obviously listen to communities, but that needs to be set in the context of the wider economic agenda that the country has, which is we want to earn more revenue so we can spend more revenue on things that matter for people, whether it's healthcare, education, or providing other social services.
So if there was a bad community effect, though, that could be outweighed by what you've said
in national. Sure, and all of that has to be taken into consideration, and I think... It's my view it is possible to balance the interests of a community and also make sure that mining is undertaken in an environmentally sensitive way. And in fact, in many communities around the country where mining is currently undertaken, not only are they welcomed by the local community, they're actively cheered on.
You hope to be welcomed in the Coromandel
Well, the feedback from Sandra Gatti is that she hasn't had an overwhelming number of people actually raising the issue with her in their electoral office. So, yes, there'll be obviously some people who will feel very strongly about the issue and no doubt make that those thoughts known. But I think it also needs to be seen in perspective of what we're talking about in the Coromandel, which is, again, some very small parts of that Coromandel Peninsula.
You mentioned the RMA process a couple of times now. So presumably that means it's up to district or local councils to decide whether or not mining would proceed. I mean, is the government prepared to give any undertaking that it wouldn't use its hauling power to override that?
Well, I don't think it's likely we'd be doing that.
What is the factor in the case of Great Barrier Island?
Sorry?
The bits mine.
Well, this is subject to some debate, actually.
Yeah, it is. I'll just make the point that the Auckland District Plan can be challenged by anybody. Anyone can ask for a plan change. People who build buildings every day of the week find that they need to go for plan changes. So there's nothing unusual in that. I think the other thing is, of course, the whole of the coastal plan for the whole of New Zealand is currently under review by the Ministry for the Environment. So. Some of the issues raised about those legalities, I think, are somewhat straw. I think people should concentrate on thinking about the conservation values, ecological values in those areas compared to the mineral wealth.
What assurance can you give about environmental protection? Because Silver Gold saying no, these companies will have to do this. But, you know, 10 years down the track, when there has been damage
Well, the same assurances they get when they undertake mining today. So what we're talking about today is the removal of certain parts of New Zealand landscape out of Schedule 4, which doesn't mean it automatically will be mined, it means it's subject to a permit. But already today, outside of that Schedule 4 land, there are applications for mining, and they have to meet the environmental standards subject to the Resource Management Act, so it's exactly the same. Is the environmental impact greater? In other words, is there substantial environmental impact? Well, I think the answer to that actually is often no. Some of the evidence of previous mining is actually the restoration work has left the environment in better shape, not worse shape. So previous mining activities many decades ago, of course, under different techniques, did have an impact on the environment, but we have no plans of returning to that sort of mining. Well, they'll have to meet the standards that we expect and that are expected under the RMA. So if there are high conservation values, then again they'll have to go out as part of their consent process and talk about how they are going to resolve those issues. So if you take the case of Solid Energy when they undertook mining activity, I think it was in Stockton, everyone knows the case that part of their condition of consent was in relation to snails. They had to have a plan for that. They went away and dealt with that. Well, there may be unique features of any applications for mining, and to meet those conditions, miners will have to have a conservation plan.
Prime Minister, is this going to be it? Or, you know, these sites that may be opened up, or could there be more wholesale mining of other areas over time?
Well, obviously, we're spending some money on getting a better understanding of the mineral wealth of New Zealand. I think that makes sense. We also undertake that work and seismic work when it comes to our capability in the exploration and area as well. I mean, I think the other way of thinking about this is not so much whether we're going to open up more land. I think this needs to be seen in the context of the whole mineral, oil and gas exploration capability that New Zealand has. And I think if you look at this, you look at what we're doing around land that's outside of Schedule 4, you look at what's happening in relation to potentially iron sands, if you look at oil and gas exploration, I think it all adds up to a package of a greater significance for the New Zealand economy and therefore greater revenue for the New Zealand government to be spent in areas that we think are important to New Zealanders.
So can you give any assurances that we don't come back here in a year's time and it's sort of another few points on the map?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, to the day, yes. Yeah. Oh, I think the wish list would be much broader than this. To be perfectly honest.
Is certain cast mining, as currently practiced, compatible with the test that you have in mind?
It's not my view that open cast mining would meet with the environmental standards that would be required under the RMA.
So can you rule it out at this stage?
Well, it's not mine to rule in or out, but it's not my view it would meet the RMA standards. That's a good question, actually. I mean, there's a long process to go through. You might be handy to me, but...
Well, remember that this is a discussion document, so there's a period of 6 weeks where it's out for public consultation. There'd then be a period of analysis, and then there would be a decision, and the declaration to remove would come out of it. What I can say is that to ensure that we don't see a bit of a gold rush going on towards these sites... The Crown has today reserved all of these sites to itself so that we can progress any future opportunities in an orderly manner. I would expect that if people were to take up an area that we've, some of the areas that we've made, we're suggesting become available through this process, that it could be, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years before they actually started a mining operation. There was quite a long period of firstly prospecting, secondly exploring, and then thirdly going to the mining stage. So it takes time, but what we're saying is there's an opportunity there, and we think that New Zealand should express a view about should we take it up, and then it will be up to the individual companies to make those applications through the normal process.
Well, it's such a long lead time before any mining can actually start. If you're later talking about bringing this land back into Schedule 4, that makes for a fairly hostile environment for investment.
No, look, I don't think it does. I think... remember that under the previous government there were 82 mine sites operating on conservation land already. That Pike River got consented and began operation under a Labor government. That the my understanding is that there are elements within the Labor Party who are quite supportive of this particular process. Now, I can't speak for them politically, but what I would say is that the experience in New Zealand is that around decisions like this, the sovereign risk for investors is very, very low. So I wouldn't expect that to be a factor that played too heavily at all. Well, the Forest and Bird made sure they've got eight.
just on that, Forest and Bird, well, the nail on the head again today with the 12,000 hectares coming into the Schedule 4 program. Is there any investigation into that?
Oh, well, the State Services Commissioner has indicated he's taking a look at the whole situation about confidentiality of information from the Cabinet process, and I guess we'll report back in due course.
What would it take in terms of kind of the action for you to back away substantially from this proposal? I mean, how made up is your mind?
Well, it's a genuine discussion document. We believe there's real opportunity for New Zealand to increase its economic activity and therefore increase its wealth base and to do so on an environmentally and sustainable basis. But in the end, this is a genuine discussion process and we'll go through it.
Just a question about the Conservation Fund. I realise it's early days yet, but would it be the government's intention that any organisations connected to the mining industry would not qualify for funds that were allocated by the panel?
You can do that.
I can do that one. So now I haven't had a chance to speak yet. Well, the Conservation Fund at the moment is, and the discussion document is $2 million with a cap of $10 million. It's obviously part of the discussion document, and we'll wait and see what the public submit on it.
Because the concern in the past has been like with the Timberlands case, where there were allegations that companies connected to Timberlands were involved in the marketing of some of its initiatives.
Well, I think what we're seeing now is actually mining companies are being a lot more conservation minded, and I think if you look at something like the Pipe Rivers and the Rio Tintos and the Solid Energies, they're all contributing in different ways, whether it's to Takahi programs, Kakapo programs, Blue Duck programs, and actually they're selling that conservation story, so it's a win-win, and I think they are becoming more and more conservation minded.
So they may well qualify?
Not necessarily, not ruling anything in or out.
Okay, enough on mine?
Another issue.
Yep. Well, why don't I just flick through the rest of the stuff and then we'll go into any other issues you want. That's great. You guys can. Thanks very much. Okay, so just literally in terms of activity, this week I'm in Wellington, tomorrow on Wednesday, and then head to Auckland that evening for the World Class New Zealanders Awards. On Thursday, I'll open the Orewa Arts and Events Centre, the Highgrove Retirement Village in Albany, and the Silver Ferns Medical Centre in Waimauku. On Friday, I'm in the Horowhenua area and will open the new Live-In District Courthouse before returning to Auckland, where I'll open the new Manukau campus of AUT. In terms of in the House this week, the government will look to send a number of bills to select committee, including the Trans-Tasman Proceedings Bill and the Malaysia-New Zealand Free Trade Bill. We'll also look to pass the Māori Commercial Aquaculture Claims Settlement Bill and make progress on the Infrastructure Bill. Sorry,
just
Jessica.
Just a little segue, just perhaps that ends us from the mining part of the press conference into the more general,
yeah,
sort of slightly related issue. You know, the concept of the mining is obviously that you can go on the national parks without little impact on the environment. Just looking at the Pinkaro Lakes, where 20-odd duck shooters prevented from going on there by the EU now in control of it because of their environmental,
yep,
impact. Does that seem a little ridiculous in this context?
Well, at least there were very good reasons that would concern me, and I know it's also concerned the Minister of Treaty Negotiations, Chris Finlayson. I understand that he's had discussions with the iwi, and my understanding is that that matter will be satisfactorily resolved.
Does that mean the duck shooters will be allowed to go in there this season?
That's correct.
In relation to the Māori court case, will, yep, you be reviewing the law in light of the...
Well, look, it's too early to tell. I mean, firstly, we don't know whether the Solicitor General will actually file an appeal. And in due course, I think, depending on that, the Minister of Justice might want to review the current law in New Zealand, but that's certainly an option available to him.
Have you asked someone about
it? I haven't yet, but in due course, I'm sure, depending on the outcome of various other events, we may well do so. I don't know the legal answer to that.
Why do you feel like it?
Well, look, I mean, I don't want to go and prejudice that case, so we'll just leave that until the Solicitor General makes a decision on whether he's going to appeal or not. At that point, then we can come back and say whether we think there is merit in changing the law or not.
You make comments on practice, yeah, given that there's still a possibility of appeal, yeah. Do you think you need to be perhaps more careful in talking about issues like that?
No.
Because
I don't think I prejudiced the case.
Isn't that problematic, though, changing law in that area? Because one of the defences put up there was they believe they have a legal right to do something illegal, essentially.
Yeah.
And that underpins quite a lot of law in New Zealand.
That's right.
Defence for murder.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, it's a complex area of law, and that defence was imported from overseas. It doesn't mean it shouldn't apply in New Zealand, but we'll need to go and consider that, you know, post any particular appeal if that takes place.
Is Jim Baldur used by date on the government
board? No, I wouldn't say that. You know, we every 6 months we review the future of directors, those that whose terms are coming up for expiry. In the case of Kiwi Rail, that is the situation for Mr. Baldur, that his term is coming up for expiry. I don't want to comment any further than that, but I think he's proven himself to be a very effective chairman of a number of SOEs, whether it's been Kiwi Rail or New Zealand Post.
So can you confirm that he will be reappointed and also to the New Zealand Post
Board? I can't confirm either of those.
Are they normally 3-year
terms? No, they're normally 3 years as general, but Kiwi Rail was set up with a short-term focus. I think there was a 2-year term on that for some reason. Sometimes they are 2 years, but generally three.
Some allegations made about Māori business projects and
Well, firstly, they relate to contracts back in 2007, so they were signed under the previous government. I think the second thing I'd say is obviously we have some concerns because TPK acted proactively to stop that contract before it was fully funded and is now looking at the merits of the value for money that they've received for that contract. So I think at one level I'm very pleased to see that TPK have acted in that way because the New Zealand taxpayer needs to get value for money, and on the face of it they may not have in this case.
So you're not concerned that that it might raise questions about TPK not monitoring the ability of the prison?
No, I think, I mean, look, I haven't looked through extensively. I mean, I've obviously read what was in the Dominion Post this morning, had a brief outline of the situation, but I think the fact that they proactively acted is a good sign, and I think they were clearly trying to get more information from the organisation and had hitherto failed in that attempt. I wouldn't jump to that conclusion. That decision hasn't been made by Cabinet yet.
John Parker was reappointed last July. Are you satisfied that there are enough questions asked on that?
Well, again, I mean, if there are more questions that need to be answered, then obviously I'd expect TPK or others to get to the bottom of that. And, you know, I wouldn't want to prejudge that because I simply don't know.
Do you think any other agencies need to get involved,
say, so that's important, Janet? Again, it may be too early to tell on that. I wouldn't want to jump to conclusions.
Well, Prime Minister, just on the new building for the DCSB, the Security Bureau, and some cost overruns there, are you aware of that?
Well, there were some cost. Well, there was the potential for some cost overruns, but I've been working with my ministry, and I think they're back on track and on budget.
You're not concerned that they may be skimping on something to...
No. What I can say is that areas where it's important that they their position isn't compromised weren't compromised in any decisions that I reached with the Chief Executive in terms of meeting their budget, but I am confident that they can meet their budget.
So did you intervene here and say, look, you've got to stick within your budget?
Well, I expect value for money, unless there are good reasons. In the discussions I had with the Chief Executive, it was clear that it was possible for them to meet their budget without compromising their security.
Have you got an update or an EPA on the investigation following the credit card?
No, although, I mean, originally the Auditor General said it would be in the order of about 3 weeks, I thought, so it can't be a long way away, but I haven't asked any further questions.
Did Cabinet today consider the changes to the public service mergers that were being talked about a couple of weeks ago?
Yes, and there's still some further work to be undertaken by ministers. I mean, it's my expectation we'll be in a position to make some announcements soon, but I don't know exactly, I can't put an exact date on that soon, but it'll be in the foreseeable future.
What's the nature of that work? Is that how many potential savings, how many job losses?
I'd prefer not to detail that today. Right. Well, we would reject that view. There's going to be a Māori advisory board established as part of the legislation, and I think that will engage very actively with Māori interests in Auckland. But, of course, the Local Government Act always allows councils to make the decision to have dedicated Māori seats. That's been the case in New Zealand, and at least one of the candidates for the mayoralty has indicated that he would introduce separate Māori seats. So, in my view, democracy is working. There's, through the local government process around Auckland, there is a separate advisory board, but there's also the option within Local Government Act to change position if that's what the council of the day decides.
Where are things at the report on speaking?
Getting closer. In due course, there'll be a discussion document released, and I know that will be eagerly awaited.
How far away is it?
I would say less than a month. Can't say that today. Might as well save it for tomorrow. I don't want to unwrap all your presents today. Well, No, that's a long-term change, and that's just a reflection, I think, of modern of the modern requirements that I think the Prime Minister of the day needs to have. I think the External Advisory Bureau was a title which didn't accurately reflect the information that I, as Prime Minister, would want to have, because quite a lot of the external information that I receive has a relevance to the domestic situation, and I want the title to reflect that.
What's been the biggest domestic threat
Well, I don't go in and detail those for obvious reasons, but you know, one clear example where New Zealand will have to be have a appropriate mind to security matters will clearly be the Rugby World Cup, and that's just one example. But you know, I made the point here at the post-cabinet presser some months ago that I didn't think New Zealand was immune from people smuggling, and again, that's an example where you know there are domestic implications of what is happening externally. I haven't yet read. I mean, I had a brief oral discussion with Tim Grosser, but I haven't had an extensive briefing yet. And I think the point there would be, this is very early days. You would expect those who come along to those type of significant negotiations to start at their, if you like, most extreme or hardest position. And from there, the whole negotiations will take place. Over time, I believe that there's a big prize on the table here for all the participants in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Whether we can achieve the goal of picking up that prize was in the hands of those eight negotiating teams. I hope we can, because I think it'll be done the right way. It's in the best interest of all of those countries.
Can you do any work on actual lobbying on the Hill when you're in Washington next month?
Yeah, it's my expectation that, well, obviously I'm going for the Nuclear Security Summit, so how much time I'll have with President Obama to talk about that, I don't know. But, you know, there'll be, I'm sure there'll be some discussions in the sort of... away from the formalised agreement.
Do you think 2 years is a realistic time frame?
Well, I think the thing is, that's a very difficult thing to know at this point. I mean, these are challenging. It's a challenging set of circumstances, and we want a high quality agreement. So, coming away with agreement that, say, for instance, carved out agriculture is unacceptable to New Zealand because it just simply doesn't advance the, you know, what is a huge opportunity for New Zealand and, say, the US markets. So I think all participants, from what I can see, want a high-quality agreement, and I'd rather not rush that. Is it possible within 2 years? Well, let's wait and see.
Is the current structure of Fonterra a non-negotiable item to
concern? I would have thought so, but I don't believe that's a stumbling block. I mean, Fonterra provides a largely monopoly position here in New Zealand, but in the international markets, Fonterra actively competes. We are 2% of world production. The fact that we're a very large exporter... is a factor, but we have unsubsidised markets and we're a fraction of the world's overall production. And
it continues to be a bugbear for the Americans.
Yeah, I find a lot of things frustrating. It's mean, I'm just ringing and changing.
It's a pretty substantial power imbalance there, isn't it? You've got 50 cents in the way. Yes. With due respect to you, Mark McCulley, and Grosser, I mean, you're starting a long way behind that.
Well, as I've said, always is the case. I mean, America will not sign a free trade agreement unless they believe it's in their best interests, in the same way that New Zealand will not sign a free trade agreement unless we believe it's in our best interest. And it's my view that it is in the US' best interest ultimately to liberalise trade. I think the international evidence supports that it increases economic activity, it'll create more jobs, and it drives greater productivity and efficiency. And that is the case that President Obama has been making and Ron Kirk have been making. And I think that is the basis that they entered the TPP, and that hasn't changed in the last 4 or 5 months. Okay,